Okay, let me just very, very quickly raise hands. How many of you are veterans of Clinton Global Initiative? You've been here before. Well, congratulations and welcome back. How many of us are brand new novices? How about a round of applause for a third of the people in the room who are here for the first year? In just a couple minutes, I want to just explain to you why the Clinton Global Initiative is a little bit different than lots of the conferences we go to with lots of panels and lots of experts. The bottom line mission of the Clinton Global Initiative is to link people together to take clear action steps in the areas of climate change, poverty, education, and health. And part of why we do that so well is we're set up for people at the tables, the members who are here to get involved, to have a much more active role in our sessions than is often typical in conferences. So just quickly, let me tell you how it works. We'll have five sessions in the climate change section. Today, we'll look at redefining the role of business, and we'll look at tropical forests. Tomorrow, we'll have two more sessions and one session on Friday morning. Each one of these sessions will work in exactly the same way. We have a moderator and four panelists. They will begin by giving brief presentations on what they believe are the really critical leverage points and facts that each of us should know on the issue. Now, here's step number one that's unique. You have cards at your tables while you're listening to the presenters, really live while it's happening. If you know you have a question that you want to ask when we have a time for interaction, you write it on the card and you give it to your table facilitator. He or she will enter it into the computer right while the panel is still working. You know how in most conferences, maybe one or two or three people get to ask questions? This way, everyone who wants to ask the question, our theme team, which is reading all that data, and how about you guys stand up so we can give you a round of applause because they're going to work very hard. They will be collating those questions and organizing them for our moderator while you go on to table discussions. The moderator and the panelists will be working together across the hall to read your questions and prepare responses to them. At your table discussions, again, we all know how certain people sometimes dominate table discussions. So the way we've supported CGI on this is that every table has a facilitator who actually is very knowledgeable in the area of energy and climate change. I'd like to ask those facilitators to stand up. They're going to work very hard for the next 2.5 days. How about a round of applause for the facilitators? Thank you. During your discussions, they are actually also going to be recording those discussions so that the theme team can find the themes of your table discussions. Then when the panelists come back in, after they've responded to your questions, David Sandelo, the working group chair, will present the themes of your conversations. And the last stage is that the panelists will respond to the ideas that you came up with. Then, as usual at CGI, there'll be just a few minutes at the end of each working session for the announcements of some additional commitments. A new innovation this year, because the Clinton team is dedicated to making this you having as much influence on the agenda as possible. The Thursday morning breakfast, which is in the big plenary room, has always been open. And this year, they want to get ideas from you about topics, issues that you think should be pushed on the climate change agenda. There's a whiteboard outside our doors over there. Anytime today, if you have an idea for a topic or an issue that you want to talk about at breakfast, the Clinton Global Initiative team will take those ideas, organize some tables so when you come in tomorrow morning, you actually have a chance to take a first step on a new issue. Thanks very much. Enjoy your discussions and be as proactive as possible. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our panelists. Dr. Sultan Ahmed Al-Jaber, Chief Executive Officer, Masdar, Abu Dhabi Future Energy Company. Mindy Luber, President, Ceres. Jim Rogers, Chairman, President, and CEO, Duke Energy Corporation. Ted Turner, Chairman Turner Enterprises. And our moderator, Dan Esty, Hill House Professor of Environmental Law and Policy, Yale University.
Welcome to our afternoon program. Ladies and gentlemen, what a difference a year makes. Since last the Clinton Global Initiative gathered here in New York, there has been a remarkable change in attitudes in the business community towards the environment in general and towards climate change in particular. It is stunning to see how CEO after CEO, company after company, has begun to recognize that environment is not just regulations to meet and costs to bear and risks to manage, but is much more than that. It's an opportunity to step out, reduce energy consumption, save money while reducing emissions, and beyond that, to perhaps become a solutions provider as society steps up to the challenge of climate change, and beyond that, a whole series of other environmental challenges from water to chemical contamination. So we have before us today a very interesting topic. We've got a series of people who know it well, who've been watching and participating in the effort to bring environment into the corporate setting as an element of strategy, and who have contributed beyond that to the change in the policy domain, where we now recognize that the key to progress on so many issues, starting with climate change, is innovation. And they are helping to drive the innovation process, moving the center of action for technology development in alternative energy and energy efficiency, in carbon capture and sequestration, and a range of other technologies into the private sector. Government, of course, has an important role to play, structuring the incentives in the marketplace to promote that private sector activity, but there is a real change going on. So let's pick up that topic, and I'd like to ask Mindy Luber, who's been out across the country in her role as head of series, to talk a little bit about this change that she has seen and really helped to drive with a business world that's now stepping up to the opportunity as well as the challenge of climate change. Mindy.
Great, Dan. Thank you. I would start by agreeing with you, Dan. We have seen nothing short of a revolution. 3 years ago when we talked about climate as a fundamental economic financial driver, an issue of risk and opportunity that ran to the heart of the business and the financial sectors, there were mixed reviews. Today, with the help of almost everybody in this room, things like the Clinton Global Initiative and so on, we are seeing five articles a day, whether it's Rupert Murdoch or Sun or ConocoPhillips, the list goes on. And I want to talk a little bit about what I'm seeing. And largely, I'm going to start saying the change has been phenomenal. We are making extraordinary progress, but we have an inordinate way to go. I am not here to be the bearer of bad news. It is delightful. It is exciting. There are great things happening. But the carbon curve is going up, as we all know. If we want to get to 75% reduction by the year 2050, which we can and we will with everybody in this room doing the kinds of things you're doing, we need to double and triple and quadruple our pace, and it is the excitement and energy and the innovation of people in this room and the private sector that will make it happen, pushing their products, their policies, and their governments. But let me just quickly think about the different sectors in the business and financial community where we're seeing change. Let's look at the straight Fortune 500 or large companies. Climate is being integrated in a whole different way. It is being seen as a risk issue that belongs at the governance level. That means that it is not a special one-off project. We're going to do recycling this week, or we're going to lower our carbon footprint in one facility next week. It is being integrated in the core essence of a company. At the board level, as a governance issue, where goals are being set. At the CEO level, where their compensation is literally being tied to goals in carbon reduction and moving the envelope or moving what they do. We are seeing change within corporations, not only at the governance level, at the CEO level, but integrating what they do throughout the firm. And they are moving on a number of fronts, and I want to talk about what some companies are doing, and then very quickly the financial sector. But the things that we're seeing companies doing, whether it's PG&E stepping out on public policy and their CEO coming to Boston and saying, there has never been something that has moved my employee base to be more motivated, to want to come to work harder than my leadership in the public domain on public policy. There is change being made at Time Warner, at McDonald's, at some of the largest firms that we have seen. Citigroup, not Friends of the Earth, not Greenpeace, Citigroup, rolled out a $50 billion program, and Bank of America, a $20 billion program. That is about every part of their business, their facilities, their employees, their products, what kind of mortgages they give, what kind of credit they give. So the key here is for, as we're seeing this, to continue to integrate climate, not only as a special project, but at the board level, as a priority and a material risk and a material opportunity for the CEO and the management team and the execution team to analyze and disclose climate risk and opportunity. Transparency is a key to the corporation of today's generation. To bring the carbon footprint down in facilities, but with products. To do what Walmart announced, going after their supply chain. Companies have inordinate leverage with suppliers. And to get employees involved and change their real estate. We are seeing that every day. That's the kind of change we want to see in the corporate sector. And it's happening, but we need to keep at it. And in the Wall Street sector, we are seeing more reports every single day. Lehman last week, Goldman a few weeks ago, about climate as a financial issue that must be factored into portfolio analysis. And we saw $5 trillion worth of investors acting on climate change this year, institutional investors, because there's a risk and there's an opportunity. The goal is to get more of that happening. The kind of energy in this room is what's going to move that kind of activity.
Mindy, thank you very much. Jim Rogers, as CEO of Duke Energy, you were one of the leaders of the U.S. Climate Action Partnership. You're one of the corporate top guys who stood up and said it's time to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. And you've made a particular focus on energy efficiency at Duke Energy. Can you tell us how you have taken this issue of energy efficiency, which we've known about as part of the solution for a long time, to a higher level and moved it beyond business as usual?
Dan, thank you very much. But let me start by saying Mindy did a wonderful job of really summarizing what's going on in corporate America. And this is happening everywhere throughout our country and around the world. And what we're doing is just an example of one company trying to focus on this issue. We have a special responsibility to address the climate issue, and we believe that energy efficiency is something that we need to redouble our efforts and rethink how we've done it in the past, because this is an important first step. We have a lot of work to do in this country to move forward with a regulatory regime on carbon. We have a lot of work to do around the world to get the framework correct for post-Kyoto. And that work is going to be ongoing. But the critical thing is to go to work now and change how we think about energy efficiency and how we think about productivity gains in the future. And I start with a very simple premise. The most environmentally benign plant, power plant that I can build is the one that I don't build. And the question is, how can we go about this in a way that's more successful than we've been in the past? If you read the studies, what you find is there's been chronic underinvestment in energy efficiency in this country, chronic underinvestment in productivity gains in the use of electricity. And while we have focused on changing people's behavior, at the end of the day, we have to continue that but go beyond that. And that means changing the paradigm in terms of how energy efficient products and services are delivered. The other important overriding policy that's driving us is the recognition that as a country that we need to have an aspiration to become the most energy efficient economy in the world. Some say Japan is today, but I think that we need to, the companies within our country and countries within the world, we should create, in a sense, an arms race to see what country, what companies can become the most energy efficient in the future. That's the kind of competition that will bring the best and the innovative spirit of the people of our country and give us the capability to really achieve our targets. Now, let me tell you a little bit in a specific way how we're thinking about this. We believe that to get to a low carbon economy, you have to build a bridge. And that bridge is built with technology, and the first step on the road of technology is energy efficiency. And that's what we have tried to do is in every state that we operate, we're rolling out a new regulatory paradigm where we get compensated producing save-a-watts, a reduction in demand, in the same way we get rewarded for producing a megawatt to meet growing demand. And in our country, the demand for electricity is going to increase 40%. by 2030. And just envision the possibilities of being able to cut that by 50% or more. Think about the number of power plants that we won't build. And the way we have to change our thinking, think about the 20th century. I have the good fortune of having Neil Armstrong on my board for many years, which also led to me starting every presentation with one small step. But he was in charge of the National Academy of Engineers looking back at the greatest engineering achievement of the 20th century, and that was the electrification of America. I think our challenge as an industry is to bring universal access to energy efficiency products and services in the 21st century so that when people throw the switch, not only are they getting power and not thinking about it, but they're also getting the most efficient use of power in their homes and in their businesses. And so what we've tried to do is structure a way forward so that becomes one of our missions in the same way it was our mission in the 20th century to build out our systems to do the electrification of our America. The other thing I will say in concluding is that while we do this, we can't forget there are 1.5 billion people in the world that do not have access to electricity today. They do not have access to the modern world. They are entitled to access to the modern world. And so our challenge on climate is even greater than we, just in the Western world is a great challenge, but around the world it's an even greater challenge. To me, the key in which every company, every country can participate, whether you're a developed country or a developing country, is in energy efficiency products and services. That is something that should be universally adopted by everyone. Dan?
Thank you. Dr. Sultan, you come from Abu Dhabi, which is sort of energy central in our world, but you've been pushing the United Arab Emirates in some new directions, a new economic development strategy. Can you tell us what your thinking is and why you're doing business in a new and different way?
Sure. Well, let me tell you a little bit more and in brief about Abu Dhabi's vision and investment in the future of clean energy and environmental sustainability. In April 2006, the government of Abu Dhabi took a very bold and a historic decision to launch a new economic development program entirely dedicated to alternative energy and sustainability. This program was named the Masdar Initiative, which means the source in Arabic. It simply aims to achieve four different objectives. The first objective is to help drive the economic diversification of the Abu Dhabi economy. The second objective is to begin positioning Abu Dhabi as a technology developer and hopefully a technology exporter in the future. Today, Abu Dhabi is in large, a technology importer and a technology consumer. The third objective is to maintain and aim to expand Abu Dhabi's position in the global energy market, and especially in the post-fossil fuel era. The fourth objective, which lies very high on the agenda of our senior leadership, which is sustainable human development. Now, why? Why is Abu Dhabi doing this? And I've been asked this question many times. They always point at me and say, you, as a major oil-producing country, why are you proactively seeking a role in the alternative energy space? I believe this is a very fair question, but the answer is very simple. Abu Dhabi has always been known as an environmentally responsible energy producer. Over 25 years ago, we've instituted a regulation for zero flaring, zero gas flaring, from all of our oil and gas operations. Abu Dhabi also recognizes that the global energy markets are evolving, and the evolvement that's happening in the global energy market is happening with a substantial growth in sustainable energy. Now, that growth in sustainable energy, what does that represent to Abu Dhabi? Does that represent a threat? Or does that represent an opportunity? We believe that this represents a very unique opportunity. If we were only to capitalize on the deep energy expertise that we've acquired in the past 50 years and the substantial financial resources that we have access to from the oil and gas sector, we will ensure that we take a leadership role in developing and demonstrating our seriousness and our commitment to the development of new technologies in the clean energy space.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ted Turner, as Dr. Sultan has just suggested, there's an enormous amount of energy in the clean technology space, in alternative energy, in energy efficiency, in pollution control technology, and even in carbon capture and sequestration as people try to think through a sustainable strategy forward. And one of the remarkable things about this evolution of the last year or two is how much in the way of venture capital is moving in this direction, private equity, and it seems like the capitalist world has taken this challenge up. What do you see out there happening, and why is the business world suddenly onto this issue?
It's absolutely amazing what is happening. For instance, this is the third Clinton Global Initiative, and just look how far it's come in the last 3 years. It's just wonderful. This is the big story of our lives. This is the biggest thing that's probably going to happen to us if we're continue to remain fortunate and avoid a nuclear exchange with Russia. That's the biggest danger that we have, because at least with global warming, we've got 10 or 15 years. So if we had a all-out nuclear strike on each other, it'd all be over in an afternoon. And so we do have to keep an eye on the ball there and continue to work with the Russians to improve our relations with them and their confidence levels, and try and at least get the nuclear weapons off hair trigger alert with the long-term objective or intermediate-term objective of ridding the world of nuclear weapons. So that's one. I'm concerned with that too, and that's my number one priority. But after that, global warming is the greatest threat that humanity has ever faced, and it's right here on top of us. I think Al Gore said it best at the meeting in the large room this morning. He said, you know, it's an emergency, and I agree with that. Now, where does business fit in with that? Where business fits in with that is that businessmen, first and foremost, are human beings. They're fathers and grandfathers, too, like all the rest of us. And as I have been one all my life. And but since we're grandfathers and fathers first, we do care about what happens to the world, particularly as it affects our families and our customers and everybody else. Businessmen are human beings. And that means they're motivated by two different things, like all other people, fear and greed. And this fits, global climate change fits right in. I mean, you know, it scares the living daylights out of you, but it motivates you to do something about it. And that means go green, either go into, it's going to be the biggest business opportunity that there's ever been, because the whole world very rapidly is going to have to move away from fossil fuel, with a possible caveat and exception that sequestration is going to work, and hopefully it will. The CO2 sequestration of the CO2 from the coal-burning plants, and God help us, we sure need to do a lot of research and development on that, because the sooner that we can prove it and utilize that, that will give us a huge break. And there are a couple of other things that could conceivably give us a huge break that don't even get mentioned. I haven't heard solar satellite power even mentioned. But if you build the solar collectors out in space and then use radio, convert it to radio waves, and send it down to the Earth, and then distribute it, and you can have the solar panels in the sunshine 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as opposed to eight hours a day or whatever, which the ones sitting here on the ground do. That the efficiency is much greater, and that would be clean. Most of the structures would be out in space. So they wouldn't be taking up valuable land that these solar collectors on the ground are going to take. I mean, even building My favorite, my own personal favorite sources for the future are wind and solar, and mainly because they're the cleanest. They're the cleanest and the most sustainable, because the wind's not going to go away, hopefully, and the sun's not going to, please, you know, that. Talk about a real disaster. I mean, if we lose the sun, we're in deep trouble. You can give us a couple of days at the most before we all freeze to death, right? But that's unlikely. Okay, but there's an opportunity there to make a lot of money converting everybody over, and there's every reason to do it because it's a matter of life and death.
Ted, thank you very much. Mindy, Ted has just told us that this is a big opportunity and a potentially huge step for the business community and money to be made in a number of different directions. Governor Crist told us over lunch that he sees green to gold opportunities. I'm very enthusiastic about that comment myself. And I think you have seen a transition. You've told me you've seen it. From companies doing things in a kind of a project way, on the periphery of their business, and having seen this issue now move into the core of strategy and really central to their vision, tell us what you are seeing out there in the way of the world in terms of businesses taking this issue to a new level and to a new seriousness and strategy.
Well, I'm going to start with what is perhaps the most important thing that we are seeing businesses doing, with a lot of encouragement from a lot of good people in the room, and that is supporting public policy to limit the amount of carbon and to put a price on it. The reality is right now for the business community, for the financial sector, carbon costs zero. Carbon pollution is zero. When things are free, you get more of it. The first thing that has to happen to make sure that we have certainty within the business community, we have uniformity, we don't only have the good guys, the leaders out front, and some of their competitors dragging their heels and investing in cleaner technology, is to level the playing field. And without question, the most delightful change, but not enough, we've got to move this with a vengeance with people in this room, is the business community going to Capitol Hill to support mandatory caps on carbon as the right market signal, as the right policy, as the right way to set a good playing field for the business community. Any notion that this is just about environmental regulation, that's about strangling business, is off the charts. It's off the table. It is not the case. So we are seeing, what we are seeing is business leaders talking about the need for mandatory controls. That's radically different, Dan, and it's terrific. And we're seeing business leaders literally seeing that this isn't a one-off deal. How do they weave energy efficiency and lowering their carbon footprint into every new building they build and every new computer they put on the market? How do they make that happen? And that is happening every single day. And we're seeing these very companies, including some of the top Wall Street firms, making inordinate investments, Dan, in clean technology, in clean water, in wind power and solar energy and so on. So the world has changed. I think there's more capital by far going into renewable energy than ever in our history. There's more action by companies, and they're supporting policy in a way that's radically different and very good.
Mindy, thank you. And Jim Rogers, you're one of those companies, and you're not just bringing energy efficiency to your own facilities. You're trying to sell it to every one of your customers. So can you drill down a little bit for us and tell us just a bit more about this energy efficiency push that you're bringing to Duke Power?
I think Mindy hit on a point that's really critical to being able to do this in an economic way going forward. And we can do it in an economic way. And that is, we need a price on carbon. And that's what a cap and trade system will do. It will put a price on carbon. And once we have a price on carbon, we factor that into our analysis of what we build in the future. All of a sudden, you factor it into what technologies you use, what energy efficiency programs make sense. Because today, we don't really look at the cost of carbon, as she said, but it has to be factored in. That's the first point. I think the second thing is that while we work to change human behavior with respect to the use of energy, and we've made progress there, we need to continue to work along those lines, what we really need is the law of large numbers to go to work. We're not really pulling these new technologies through the system. There is some push by innovators and by private equity to push these technologies, but there's no pull in the system. So if a company like ours had the responsibility, as I mentioned a moment ago, to provide universal access to energy efficiency products and services. It would be our mission. And what we would do is, because our company alone has 4 million customers, and we would have the ability to pull these technologies through in a way that a technology developer can say, if I build a better product, this company will use it and develop it, and the economies of scale will come into play. So that's what's missing with respect to energy efficiency today. What's also missing, there are no incentives or significant incentives that really compensate companies like us. Think about it. We get paid for every new power plant we build, for every new megawatt we generate. What I'm saying is I'll take the risk, I'll spend the money, I'll produce a save a watt, a third party will verify the save a watt, and at the end of the day, with that save a watt, I will be able to reduce, it will reflect and be a reduction in demand on the system. So I think we need to go to work on this, Dan. It's critical to the future. And I would make one last point. You come out of a meeting like this and you feel really good. And you say, things are going to happen. And things will happen. And this is what the Clinton Global Initiative is all about, commitment and action. But I think what we really need to make this work is cathedral thinking. And what I mean by that is, if you look at all the temples, the mosques, the cathedrals that have been built around the world, they've been built over decades. And in some cases, 2 to 3 generations to build it. We're not going to get this job done unless we have that kind of cathedral thinking. I mean, the people that built cathedrals, that built the foundation, never saw the stained glass windows. Those that built the stained glass windows never really saw the steeple. And what we really need is people with the faith that we're doing the right thing and the long commitment to say, it's not about just this generation. I mean, Ted made the point great about grandchildren and our grandchildren's grandchildren. We've got to think about this over multiple generations, and we need that energy coming out of this meeting today. Thank you, Jim.
Sultan, we're almost out of time, but could you just pick one of the initiatives that Masdar is pushing forward and tell us a little bit about how it's going to change the direction of the energy future?
I'll be very brief. We're not just talking about our commitment. We're simply doing it. We're developing solar plants. We're working on wind projects in the UAE and in Abu Dhabi in particular. To demonstrate our serious commitment, we've been granted a 6.5 square kilometer piece of land from the government, a very prime location. This is going to be the alternative energy hub or a cluster. It's a mirror image of Silicon Valley, very much focused on alternative energy and sustainability. It's going to be the home of a graduate level institute that we are developing in partnership with MIT. It will have a number of world-class research facilities in partnership with a number of institutes that we are funding research at today. What's very unique about this cluster, it's going to be fully powered by renewable sources. You can already see how expensive that could be. The government is committing all necessary resources to make this a reality. The government wants to lead by example, and they want Abu Dhabi to become a serious leader in clean energy. One last thing I want to say, I really want to get a message across. We're serious, we're committed. Abu Dhabi provides an open global platform for cooperation to address 3 main issues: climate change, energy security, and sustainable human development. If you're serious and if you're committed, let's talk. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I just like to say that I enthusiastically endorse the last 3 speakers' comments.
Ted, is there a favorite company you have out there that you think's really breaking new ground? I won't tell you how much payoff there was ahead of time to get that advertisement. Our time is up. We are going to break now, and the action turns to all of you. This is your chance at the tables all around this room to pick up the issues you've seen laid out in front of you on the dais and to tell us what you think the big themes here are, what you think the opportunities are in the private sector to help drive this, And frankly, let's not forget the government role. Several of the speakers have stressed that. What is it the government should do to sharpen the incentives for action, to drive innovation, and ensure we get the investment across the sweep of issues, from energy efficiency to wind and solar and beyond, that you heard the panel here today say that we need? So we will break now and give you the chance for the next 25 minutes or so to be the participants in this discussion, and we will come back at that time and hear your comments and try to respond to the suggestions you're making to us. So thank you very much. We'll see you in 25 minutes.
Thanks very much to Dan and all the panelists. I'm just going to take a minute to sharpen the questions that Dan laid out there so that your table group discussions can be quite focused. If we can have the discussion questions are up on the screen and you have it on your computers, but the panelists themselves gave you lots of examples of best practices in business. We know that the public in general, not just in the United States but around the world, does not realize how many businesses are already putting some of these things into practice. So we want to give you a chance at the tables to add to that understanding and that information. So please tell us any of the best climate change practices or programs that you know about that business is already providing leadership on. You also heard each of the panelists acknowledge that at this moment we're at the beginning of this fight, not even anywhere near to the middle of it. So we need extraordinary, continued visionary leadership from the business sector. And the second part of your discussion we'll hope you'll put out there. What is it that business leaders themselves could do to get that incentive shift? What is it that business leaders themselves can do to get those economies of scale? So those are the two topics that we hope you will, in fact, talk about at your tables. And when the panel comes back, they will respond to the questions you just put into the computers and then respond to the themes of your discussion. Enjoy. You'll have a little over 25 minutes.